Hello and welcome to Wonder Pod. It's episode 103, take two. Yeah, that's right. I think we're good this week. The show's actually recording. Everybody's connection is good. John was a little late because he had tests to run and chemicals to mutate, but other than that, we're good to go. Joining me this week, as always, is Glacinator.
Hello.
And also joining us, like I said a minute ago, is John. He made it.
Hey everybody. Yeah, a little bit tired, a little worse for wear, but here I am.
Yeah, that's mutating chemicals. I don't think that's exactly how it works. See how I barely got out of chemistry like I was talking about before the show?
Well, mutating chemicals is a better term than whipping up potions, which
Yeah,
I've
I
heard,
don't know. That's
which
a
I've heard,
good.
which, I, which I've heard people describe it as.
Well, considering if you find the right evangelical Christian, they look at what you do as something close to alchemy and unbelievable. So there you go. Yeah, maybe I like mutating. You're right. Maybe mutating chemicals is better. Sadly enough, I got an A minus in that chemistry class. And that was without bribe slipped to the professor. Glacinator, what have you been playing this week?
Well, I'll just go off of what I was saying last week, but
Yeah,
continue
mixed up. I
it
don't
this
know how
week.
we do it.
Well, what I said last week was I was playing Zelda Skyward Sword, and basically that's all I've done this week as well as I kept going. Last week I was talking a lot about one dungeon, which was basically centered on a pirate ship, and so far that was the most creative dungeon that I had encountered at the time, using time crystals to make the ship go back in time from like a technological, like advanced ship to like it being run down in the ocean and back and forth. It was a cool concept. This week I finally found Zelda, but I won't spoil anything what happens of what she reveals. But I had to seal a demon that for the third time with my sword. There's this thing that you do every time where you go back to one of the, it's called the Sacred Temple, and this black demon thing comes up out of the ground. And it walks up in a spiral up this canyon, and you have to kill it before it gets to the top, or else it'll take over the temple and you'll lose. It was cool the first time, but you have to keep doing it, and it's basically the same thing every time, so I wish that they hadn't really had used that so much. But other than that, I'm just trudging through. I did some side quests. I found a rattle for a baby in a bird's nest. I don't know why that was there. I got the hook shots. Hook shots are pretty awesome since that you can dual wield them automatically, and you can just like sort of like flip-flop between different vines and grapple hooks that you can grab onto. And I just beat the dungeon where it's a fire dungeon, and at the very end you fight a guy with a sword. And for some reason I did not know how to use the sword properly, so I kept just wailing at the screen with the Wiimote. And my roommate was in his bed watching me and was like, "What the heck are you doing, man?" And I got to the point where I was so frustrated because I couldn't beat the guy that I just got right in front of the sensor bar and just started throwing the Wiimote and the nunchuck up and down, back and forth to try to hit this guy because he freaking dodged everything that I threw at him. I got mad. I threw the Wiimote. I hate to admit that, but I threw the Wiimote on the ground. I said I'd done, and I walked out. I came back in like 30 minutes later, sat down in the chair, like relaxed. Took my time and got through it, but that was so frustrating. I don't know if it was the sensor bar messing up, if I was just being retarded, but I'm glad it's done. And that's what I've been playing.
Do you know the boss he's talking about, John?
I sure do, yeah. Glace, you've been chugging along that pretty good. You're almost caught. Well, I don't know if you're almost caught up to where I am, but again, I haven't been playing it very much in the last week. But yeah, that boss, that guy is. I th when you this
Guy or
that's a,
girl, I don't know. It's
yeah, he's somewhere in
the most
between.
androgynous thing I've ever seen in my life.
Oh,
But
they're stealing characters from Final Fantasy now?
yes.
But maybe a little creepier, and he plays the creepy very well. Now, that's one thing about Skyward Sword. You end up doing or returning to locations a little bit too often and facing, the same guy a couple of times. And you just mentioned the guy with the sword. Yeah, he's also the first boss that you face. and the creature that's down in that temple you mentioned that you had to follow and knock him away again with your sword. You know, you face him a couple of times. It's they're good bosses, they're good fights, but I some of the repetition in Skyward Sword is what really hurts it. I think, in as much as I love the game, I am enjoying having fun what I'm doing, but there is some repetition in there that I wish this had to have, like, why not another boss, or why not a fourth location rather than, like, you said you were at the fire temple, you hit that fire temple 3 or 4 times.
You know, I found something interesting. I was monitor shopping, or smallish TV shopping, this week, and I happened to be in two Walmarts, one of the super variety and one of the regular Walmart variety. And I was looking at Wii games, and you know what I noticed, John?
Mm-hmm.
Neither of them had copies of Skyward Sword. Oh. They had the thing there, but they were both out, which I found kind of surprising. I could have had Metroid Other M. I could have had Twilight Princess. One of them still had a copy of that. Every Mario game you could think of. What's that? Kirby. Both Epic Yarn and the new Kirby, but I was a little surprised. I mean, I haven't hit up GameStop or anything like that to continue the research, but I was a little surprised in that I could not find a copy of Skyward Sword.
That's interesting.
I found where they're, you know, the little price thing. You know, the little slot where they go.
Easy yeah. For oh, me yeah, to say. Yeah.
But, so, I mean, they're carrying them, but it must have sold really, really well. I mean, I eventually intend to get a copy. It's just all going to come down to when. But yeah.
I think Skyward Sword is doing much better in North America than it's doing or did in Japan. I think that's a thing. I think that's true.
That's a little surprising. I'm not surprised that it is. Well, no, I am surprised that it is, but I'm not super surprised it's happening. Japan's tastes are changing, and there's a lot of upheaval in both in the industry and in consumers in Japan. You know, you'd think something like Mass Effect would be right up their alley. It's similar S to Final Fantasy, and I saw it came in like 20th in the Japanese charts on launch week. Wow. Either that or the irrational outrage storm has slowly drifted east from North America, and they found that and they saw it coming. So, besides chemicals and Zelda, what have you been playing this week?
Besides that, it really hasn't been much. I'll talk briefly. What I mentioned during the defunct episode was that non-game that's on your 3DS, everybody's 3DS, that you use using the Street Pass, the Find Me and Find Me 2. That are preloaded on there when you buy your 3DS. So it's I say it's a non-game because you don't actually, there's no real big strategy to the game, because what it is, you Street Pass, and that person who you Street Pass with, their Mii, ends up on your 3DS, and you can use them to try to rescue your king in this sort of very, 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 very light RPG. Turn-based RPG where the enemies never really attack you. They do kind of foil you some of your attacks, but they never actually hit you. You never take damage. So that's where I kind of mean. That's what I kind of mean by it is not really a game. But the fact that you can do this and you know there's a progression through this map where you beat enemies along the way, and at certain stopgaps you get a treasure chest where you get a hat that your Mii can wear. And there's little things like if the color of your shirt matches the, or I should say, if you have, say you have two people who have visited your, whose Mii's have street passed, and they are wearing the same colored shirt, you can have them as a team and double up your damage on the enemy or the magic power and that kind of stuff. It's so much a non-game, but it is a game, of course, and I think it's a great idea for them to put on the 3DS to encourage you to always have the Wi-Fi on, so that like looking down at your closed 3DS and you see the little green light pop up that you've street passed is very satisfying and makes you want to flip it open and see who's there, who did you run into that you didn't know you did. And it's a cool thing where so many, you feel like you're part of the 3DS community in a sense. You're in this little elite club. Now, if you're in a bigger city, I guess, you know, in my town, you know, I street pass once a day with Roger, or maybe twice a day with Roger, and so we've gotten pretty far in the various quests and the trading of puzzle pieces that you can also do. But you know, I've heard people talk about going to places like PAX or conferences and video game conferences. I mean, and you're just getting oodles of street passes, and it's hard to even keep up with them. So it's pretty exciting and a little bit overwhelming if you get a lot. So yeah. Kudos to Nintendo for coming up with a cool idea for their 3DS. Otherwise, what I didn't play, but I watched somebody play, was the beginning of Oblivion. And that's my wife. Actually, Bruce, I don't know if you saw me post it on Facebook or Twitter, but she was trying to decide on what's a new game that she wanted to play. And Wanda, as I mentioned before on the podcast, Wanda's a big Fable 2 fan. She's not quite as happy with Fable 3, so she decided to go with either Oblivion or Dragon Age. She really didn't know which one she wanted, and both, you know, both being RPGs, both being pretty dedicated games. So she ended up going with Oblivion, and so it was pretty funny watching her try to maneuver in first person, because she's not really a gamer in first person shooters or anything like that. Like It was kind of like watching a tank move around. Like she didn't look around with her head, but she looked around with her whole body. Like she turned to the right and looked directly up and down, that kind of stuff. It reminded me of me when I first started playing with first person shooters and stuff, because I was terrible, very terrible. And it took games like Left 4 Dead actually to get me into it and my response time and to pick up. But yeah, I mean, what was one part that she did? It was still in the tutorial, but she came upon this orc that was standing over a table, I think, and the little prompt encouraged you to sneak past him, or else you'd have to fight him. And Wanda did not want to fight him, and it was hilarious. I was standing there next to the television watching it, getting closer and closer to the screen, trying to see what he was doing and what stuff she could try to sneak. What items she could snatch from behind him without him discovering her, and we were totally into it. It was great, and she did sneak past. She managed to go by without getting attacked, so she was very very gleefully happy that she did so. And yeah, that's all that I've been playing and watching.
I was trying to remember if you can, and more games need to incorporate this. I was trying to remember if you can switch that to third person.
You probably can, but we didn't try it. I seem to recall playing a few minutes of Oblivion on PC, and then I did, I take that back. That might have been a different game. I think Roger might have been. Was it Roger? I can't remember. Someone was playing. I was pretty useless. Someone was playing, somebody was playing an RPG that was in first person that they switched to third, and I thought it was Oblivion. Maybe it wasn't, but
I think you can in Oblivion and Skyrim. And I'm just as useless. Don't feel bad, John. I know you had a rough week, worked a lot of hours. I feel for you there. It's usually my normal week when the weather's not crap like it's been. But
yeah, my brain's pretty well scrambled eggs right now. So
oh, that's fine. It makes for a better show. What the hell? Or I should say, unintended funnier show maybe is better. Not, no, I'm going to quit digging that hole. Anyway, I think it's the Skyrim and Oblivion that you can. And funnily enough, I'm no more use because I've played both of them and I can't remember because I'm used to first person.
Mm-hmm. I tell you though, the funny thing, we opened up this Oblivion Game of the Year edition, and all that was in it was because I live in Canada. All that was in there was the French abbreviated manual, so there was no help for us. We had to try to figure out all the icons on our own, and eventually, like the following day, Wanda she ended up looking through a FAQ on the internet trying to find what the hell everything meant. Turns out the feather means that it's the weight of the item.
Oh yeah. Well, and they did that a little different. Yeah, the feather thing even threw me. I've played so many RPGs, and so many things tend to run together. You know, like equipment durability or weight you can carry, or how you are able to carry more weight, or armor values or armor types and this and that. You know, it just kind of all, you know, I can just kind of mow through it and I'm fine. But yeah, there's a few things in Oblivion with the icons and things that are a royal pain in the ass to figure out. According to GameSpot, about the only thing they're useful for. Yeah, you can play it in third person.
Okay.
I
You
was
can play third person in Skyrim too, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, I know I did because
I
there's a
mean,
couple.
because I've watched my brother play, my little brother, the annoying one, and all he does now is he did like this werewolf quest where he can be a werewolf now,
Yeah.
and so all he does is go into third person and then run around towns and kill people.
As a werewolf.
Yeah, as a werewolf.
I don't think I've ever I had to, I did that quest as well. Actually, it was the one that was boned until they finally patched it because enemies didn't respawn in the right spot. Yeah, he's right because I had to do some archery stuff in third person because it was just too
Okay.
big a pain in the ass to figure out how to do it in first.
Right.
And I'm getting confused because I played a shit ton of Kingdoms of Amalur: Reckoning this week, and I know that one goes in third person and first, but it's not
Yeah.
Oblivion.
So if I can say one more thing about the Oblivion experience
Sure.
for Wanda, she as I mentioned, I posted that fact that she made this choice on Facebook, and so I've had a slew of friends actually criticizing her choice, saying that Dragon Age is a superior game and Oblivion is old and crappy. And when I know that, you know, everybody and their dog played Oblivion, but yeah, Wanda was pretty devastated, but she's sticking with her choice. One of the people who responded is she works for the provincial government, and it's funny that she talked about. Well, I'll tell you about her first. She's a mother of two. She again works in the provincial government, and she seems very straight-laced, very reserved and stuff at times. But what's hilarious is that she commented saying that Fallout was much more supreme than either Dragon Age or Oblivion, and that Fallout New Vegas she liked better. And she couldn't wait to get through Skyrim in order to go back to Fallout 3 and get that third ending. And I was, oh my God, like she's more hardcore than I am, and she's way more reserved than I am. Like she's still kind of like she's a like I mean I know I'm pretty well not that much younger than her, but it seemed like she was totally not the type of person who would play games, but she is,
Well,
but she does.
I will never pick on somebody's taste, but I have no intention of ever going back to Fallout 3 or Vegas, New Vegas ever again, or Dragon Age for that bloody matter. I mean, I'm sorry, Dragon Age, maybe I'm too harsh on Dragon Age. I'll give it that. But at the same time, Oblivion is by far a 10-time better RPG than Dragon Age. I'm sorry.
All right, if you'll pardon me, Bruce. Wanda, Bruce says that you made the right choice. Wanda's here with me in the room, so.
I've played both of them. I've put at least 90. I put 90 hours into Oblivion and 70 hours into Dragon Age twice. The second time because I felt like maybe I had was playing it wrong. The outcome in both was Dragon Age is not for me, and it's not really that great RPG. And part of my problem too is, you know, you get these people flipping out about BioWare stuff, and they've played games since Mass Effect 1. BioWare games, or maybe Dragon Age. I've been playing BioWare games since like 1996 when they were working with Black Isle, or they were just the publisher. You know, so it's kind of I have a hard time sometimes going, who in the hell do I blame? Who in the hell's side am I on here? I mean, because they've done so much that's been so good. You know, if you look at their whole body of work, their mistakes have been few. Really. As for what I've been playing, I have not been playing Mass Effect 3, although I got some birthday gift cards from Best Buy, so I may finally pick it up just to see if I join the outrage crowd after bashing on them for what, 3 weeks now. Wouldn't that be hilarious? And it's not going to happen. What I have been playing is more Angry Birds in Space, which I talked about last week. Was so pissed off the show got screwed up last week that I wrote about it. That and to test the screen cap capabilities of the iPhone, finally. It's not that I don't know how to do this shit, people. It's just I forget and then get lazy and then don't do it. It's worth 99 cents. I'm just going to say it like that. I didn't think Rovio could do enough to make another full Angry Birds game, not just tack more levels on like they've been doing with the original, or make something that not too many people like Angry Birds in Rio, but they did. The gravity alone and the different kinds of gravity that you have to deal with, and the Sonic character redesigns has made it worth 99 cents. I mean, like John talked about last week, come on, we're talking like the lowest price point you can possibly get to. So it's kind of hard. It's kind of hard to feel like you lost your money, and I definitely didn't. But speaking of mobile, Google has switched out their entire Android market. They call it Google Play now. And the nice thing about that is if you use Google Plus, and I know that three quarters of the world, I see sarcastic horse shit all the time, thinks Google Plus is dead and da 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 da. Well, I'm a Google head, so it works perfect for me and the people I interact with on there. It's awesome. But it also, when I'm in Google Plus or my Google Calendar or Google RSS reader, which I use for this show, there's now a play button, and I can download games right there. I can go, oh, hey, that game looks good, and it'll just zap it to my phone wirelessly. So I also played on my Android this game called, what the hell is it? It's called Skaterboard or some silly shit like that. It's a side-scrolling skateboard game where you basically got to make it through a level, and it's free, and it was a riot. I mean, it's ridiculous and simple, but it's fun. The final thing that I finally took the plunge on mobile gaming and decided to mess with was not emulators. Basically, N64 games on the mobile phone. I've tried two. I tried Mario Kart 64 and I tried Super Mario 64. Mario Kart 64 did not work super well. Had a lot of black blockouts, or I should say, blocky characters. It finally crashed my phone. But Super Mario 64 worked extremely well. And after Mr. Patrick gave me a list of games I should try running through, and I looked through the list of games I could get, I'm going to be spending some more time with it. Now, I had to spend, what was it, about $3 total to set this up, and maybe I'm not going to get $3 worth out of it, as lazy as I can be. But it's amazing to me that a year-old phone, as fast as they're improving, the Droid 3, is able to run N64 games and run them fairly well. Now, granted, the N64 is a couple generations back, but still, I thought the $3 investment was worth it to me simply to see if it was even possible. And it
Yeah,
is.
that's not bad, you know.
I mean, they got Star Fox on there, Zelda. I can get Ocarina of Time, 1080 Snowboarding, Conquer, all the stuff that I liked on the 64. WWE No Mercy, which, hey, shout out to G. We may have our disagreements on where its place in the pantheon of gaming belongs, but I will probably download it for my for my phone just to see how it
Can you
looks
do
on there.
multiplayer?
I don't know. I suppose if you have the same emulator and the whole setup, yeah. I'll have to check into that for you, Glacinator, and find out. It's kind of interesting because the emulator I'm using has the whole joystick outlined on your touchscreen, but it's clear. Like it has the C buttons, it has the A and B, it has the bumpers, and it has the analog stick. But it's all clear, so you can see through that as well. It takes a second to get used to, but once you get used to it actually works pretty well. I'm sure they make them for the iPhone too, Glaze. I just didn't look on there. Maybe I should, because I need to be a little more careful crashing the phone that I have to use as a phone for work and stuff too. Maybe I might want to take that into account for future purposes or purchases. Also played some more Anno 2070. I got stuck on a couple single player things, and there's a couple things that I need to do some research on, because I don't think, speaking of tutorials, John, and users manuals that weren't very helpful, although at least these weren't in French, that I'm just not getting how to do it correctly. I think my experience would be a little better if I maybe read through some wikis a little bit. So that's my goal for next week. Finally, the last thing I bought was the KOA Reckoning Legend of Dead Kell DLC. 800 points, and I'm here to tell you, maybe not for everybody, but to me, this is DLC done right. It added a whole another main quest. It gave you a butt ton of side quests to do, especially if you'd finished the game as I had and had done most of the faction side quests. And it gave you a house to reconstruct that basically becomes your own kingdom. As far as I am into the DLC, I am now the lord, or I should say lady, playing as a female, of Gravehall Manor. I have a beast tamer. I have a guy who goes and scouts shipwrecks for me. I mean, it's all these little, very simple things that actually turn out to be a lot of fun. It adds a new area to the game. I would say it probably added about another 5 hours of gameplay. The only downside, and I actually was talking about this on Twitter with shit, his name's escaping me, but he writes for Destructoid. I was talking to it, with him about it, and our only bitch, and it was mine, and I noticed he talked about it in the review, was the character Dead Kell was a little weak, and I think they should have given you some more options on how to deal with him in the end. I think part of that is because it's DLC done after the fact, and part of that is in KOA, some of the main enemies you run across, or boss enemies that you run across, are written really, really powerful. I mean, the Kell storyline was good, but I think 38 Studios should have thought about maybe giving you, oh, what's the term I want to use without spoiling it? Some paragon options, some good guy options, let's call it that. But ultimately, that's really the only thing that's wrong with it. I was reading, I made the fatal error of reading the comments on that Destructoid review of it, and oh, I got burnt out on this game. Oh, I got burnt out on this game. Da 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 da. Well, so did I, but I hadn't played it in a month. I mean, that's the thing about RPGs that I always find is if I'm getting burnt out on them or feel like I'm just doing the same crap over and over again, well, that's a great thing. You don't have to trade it in. I can usually put down an RPG for a month, pick it back up again, and have a lot of fun with it for about 2 weeks, even without DLC or anything like that. But one thing I'll give 38 Studios credit for, no matter what your stance is on DLC, this was priced right. It added enough to the game. And it had zero to do with the main storyline, so it wasn't just on the disc. And I can tell you from the file size, it wasn't on the disc. So if DLC needs to exist, this is how they need to do it. I got to give 38 Studios a thumbs up for that. I fully expected this to be 1,200 points and me to just go, yeah, right, and not do it. But I had no issue with giving up 800 points. I liked the game enough. And it sounded like an interesting premise enough. Finally, one other thing too. If you're looking for some long form demos, Pat basically ended up telling me this was, I got to play the first chapter of this game. You're looking for some long form demos and you use Google Chrome, start searching around their store a little more. I played the whole first chapter of Mini Ninjas this week for free, and it's the 360 version. It's a little wonky, because as much as I'm pretty good with a keyboard and mouse, it seems like they did not smooth out the controls enough for the potential jerking that can come with a mouse as compared to a 360 controller. Beyond that, so it made working the camera a little bit of a pain. But beyond that, it's the 360 version of Mini Ninjas on my browser. I mean, if I wanted to give them money, I can continue to, you know, I could pay for chapters after that. But I thought it was a pretty slick way to put the game out there. Give you one chapter, see what you think. If you like it, you can pay for more. In my case, what I'm going to do, I'm going to wait until it drops just a little bit more in price at either Amazon or one of the retail stores and pick it up, because it was a lot of fun. I had a blast playing it. Like Pat talked about the show he was on here recently. It's really, really cute. It's kind of a kick in the pants, and it's a, you know, at a $25 or $30 price point, it's a good way to, you know, it's a good way to kill probably 6-7 hours. But if you're interested in stuff like that, I don't know how many of those there are. I didn't really go digging around a lot. I just saw somebody talking about Full Mini Ninjas on Twitter, on Chrome, excuse me. And I thought, well, hell, you know, Bastion was pay, as John told us, but maybe if it's not too expensive, I'll try picking it up there. And it ended up being basically an even longer demo than you get on Xbox Live, which I found. I think that's a smart way to maybe market games after they've been out for a while. And that's all I've been playing. Sorry, guys. There was a lot. I mean, I didn't even think I covered crap I was doing 2 weeks ago except for Angry Birds. I forgot how much I had to say about that Dead Cal DLC.
Yeah, it was a few things. That's good, though.
Well, I mean, the weather's been crap. I haven't had a shit ton of stuff to do this week. I'm kind of the opposite of you, John, so I've actually had some time to play games. I didn't even talk about Minecraft, but it's pretty much same crap, different week. I'm just farting around. Let's move on to our discussion topic. Our discussion topic this week isn't expected to go far, but I didn't want to rerun last week's, and this is something that no matter how some of our audience may claim opposite, it's probably something we should at least discuss, pay attention to. It's relevant. It's recent. For those of you who don't know, Game/GameStation, and this is the UK equivalent to GameStop for those of you that live under a rock, went belly up. They've gone into what's known as administration over there, basically bankruptcy. I've seen a zillion reasons, read rumors flying around as to why this happened. But in my observation of the gaming news, as I do week in and week out, this seemed pretty sudden. Depending, I suppose, on your definition of sudden, but sudden to me. And it seemed interesting, given, you know, there's a developer every day coming out screaming how used game sales are destroying the developers and publishers, yet you have a game store retailer who probably made a pretty good chunk of change on used going down by the bow. My question is twofold, and John, we'll start with you. First part of the question is should GameStop be nervous about this? Is this something they should be paying attention to, because they could be next, even if they're you know, their profits and financials are doing well at this point?
Yeah, it's something to definitely think about, and maybe come up with some strategies to protect themselves. It's not a good sign, especially with the various rumors around. You hear about, you know, systems not supporting used games, and you know, what we seem to be ready to jump on the whole downloadable game space. Full games, you know, download only, is definitely something that you want to think about if, you know, if the used game stores will go the way of the dodo, definitely.
Clayson, your same question.
I mean, I more or less agree with John. I mean that I can't imagine a hit closer to home than that. I mean, the equivalent to your store in another country, just it's there and then nope, not there anymore, bankruptcy. I mean, obviously they're going to be paying attention to this, and they're going to have some sort of measures to figure out what they're going to do. And I do think that this is indicative of what we will see in the next decade, most likely. I personally don't see GameStop sticking around the rest of eternity. So, yeah. I mean,
let's just continue with you, Glaze. Is this due to digital more than publishers fighting used game sales?
I mean, I can't make that judgment right now because I don't know enough about the whole thing. I mean, there could be something wrong with their business model over there, or there could be something wrong internally. I mean, used games definitely have hurt, and you can say that as an argument that that did help kill it, but I don't know if that's the sole reason.
Well, I'm sorry. I phrased the question wrong. Do you think the move to more and more digital sales had an impact or played a part in this? I guess
yes,
would be a better way
to course, yes. 100%, of course.
Yeah.
I mean, you'd be ignorant not to say yes.
John, same thing?
It's definitely a contributing factor. It has to be. I mean, the wider acceptance of digital download for games is just getting bigger and bigger and bigger between things like, your Xbox Live Arcades are small, you know, sort of bite-sized games, but that there, you know, there's a reason why they're bringing out these on-demand services, you know, the games on demand things, and PlayStation, PS3 is actually, I think, doing a better job of selling full retail games on the PSN. I mean, Mass Effect 3, for example, was available at launch day for the same price that you could buy in the store, like, and you don't even have to leave your house. I get a little bit feisty when I hear about digital games being, for example, I think I saw a Tiger Woods 09 game still at full price on the on demand, like the Xbox on demand, and I just laugh my ass off. But then again, you know, if it's convenient, if I can't find a copy of the latest hot game and I can get it on my machine for the same price, maybe I would think about it, you know. It's definitely a contributing factor, and it's only getting bigger.
You know, it's funny. I saw that, I think, used. No, Walmart doesn't sell used. I think I saw that new in Walmart for $17. Tiger 09.
Oh, 09. Yeah, exactly, right?
Yeah, I mean, they're going to – we've been arguing – some of the people I follow on Twitter and I have been talking about that this week too, is the price model's broken, and it cannot keep – they cannot keep clinging to the $60 price point as the only price point with an ass ton of DLC to buoy those costs. I mean, no matter what you want to blame it on, digital is bringing different pricing formats, whether it's mobile digital, whether it's PC digital like Steam and Origin. I think I'm sure there's going to be some mismanagement or, you know, rich evil person with his hand in the till. Although if that hasn't come out about this company at this point, I'd be a little surprised if it does at all, because, you know, the trustworthy and upright media that we have these days, that's the first angle they're going to work until it runs dry. But I think digital and the changing game marketplace, because Best Buy over here is not doing it very good well either in total electronic entertainment. And I think the internet and digital marketplace, whether it's digital games or digital in general, like Amazon, has had a more significant impact than we realize. In fact, I was a little surprised to see this happen this soon. And by that, I mean this soon in the digital revolution. I mean, companies can go under for any reason on any given day of the week. It doesn't take a hell of a lot sometimes. But we're talking about a gaming retailer that up until probably, I think, 2 months ago was the first time I started seeing issues where they weren't going to stock games and there might have been, you know, some financial rumblings, was thought to be just as healthy as GameStop. So this seems a little soon in the quote-unquote digital revolution. John, do you feel the same way, or is pretty much all bets off now?
I think time will tell a little bit more. I think it might be a little bit too early to put the, you know, to say it was digital, you know, completely. But I mean, one thing that pops in my mind were the rumors. I think we discussed it before about how the Wii U may have a third party run its online, like an Origin or Steam. And if that incorporates some sort of digital download store with the Wii U, and then the Wii U is playing games that you can play on other systems, you know, like it's if that ever came to pass, that's a major shift in how games on a home console are obtained.
Yeah, and I might have phrased it wrong. I just meant overall in the timeline of when digital started to now.
Oh.
This retailer going under seems a little soon. I figured it would be longer before we started seeing these brick and mortars go under. It's
Yeah.
more what I meant. Sorry about that.
Oh, that's cool. I think it does seem a little fast, and I think Glaze has, had a good point, a couple of good points about, there's likely some mismanagement issues probably going on in there as well. Like I said, I think it's a contributing factor. I don't think it might be the end all to be all, but it's definitely in there.
Now, Glace, you said something about GameStop not being around forever. So does this seem a little soon in the timeline to you, or are you not as surprised as I was?
No, I guess I'd say I'm pretty surprised. This does seem a little early, but what I think would be interesting to see would be to see if digital sales in the UK are proportionally higher to hard copies than they are in the US. And I think if you figured out what statistics that were, that you could go off of that and see how different the US is compared to the UK. I mean, I don't know, the UK may be a lot more online than we are overall, so it may have hit them faster, for all I know.
You bring up a very good point, and I didn't think about it because I have friends in like Denmark and Sweden and stuff, and they make fun of me every time I write a check because they don't do that anymore. And here's what ha and you think about it, the UK is not, even when you count Ireland and Wales, well, that is the UK, but size-wise, population-wise, they're nowhere near as big as America and Canada, which would be, basically the North American sale area. Going back to what I was talking about with my friends in the Nordic countries, technology that we developed or had a major hand in developing, they've implemented totally. I mean, one of my friends loves to give me crap and tell me that, she hadn't written a check in 15 years. Well, I'm sorry, but it doesn't work that way over here. The country's too big to have this uniform system as of yet. And especially when you're talking about something with internet, I have an aunt that lives no more than roughly 15, 20 miles from me and can barely get an internet connection. Now, granted, I live in a little more rural area. But that might be an interesting point to research, Glacier, or at least I'll keep my eye on it, because maybe that is it. Maybe digital sales are bigger in the UK than they are here. So what's that sound like to you, John? That's an interesting point.
I'm sorry, I got distracted. Could you say that one again? I really apologize for that.
Oh, no problem. Glacier, you heard Glacier's point that maybe the UK has more digital sales compared to the US, and I was babbling and rambling on about the fact that given that they're a smaller population size, maybe that's true. Maybe they've adopted digital sales faster than we have.
It could very well be, you know. I'd love to see some stats on that, and if that's the case, I mean, like if you could see the trend in growth of digital sales and acceptance in Europe and compared to the U.S. if that cl if the climb is anywhere comparable, perhaps the rate is a little bit slower in America, but I mean, it would definitely be some interesting things and maybe worry worth for someone like a GameStop.
Yeah, if that is the case, I think GameStop is safer for longer because of what I was babbling about, that we have such a much larger land base, both your country and ours, John, that it's going to take longer to be able to have full implementation, i.e. internet connection speeds, to be able to implement that's not an easy word to say a bunch of times in a row. Fully to where it might start to affect them more. And plus, I don't know what Game had for digital market. Now, GameStop has bought some digital services and companies. I don't know anybody personally that uses them. But they're attempting to go there. But that's why I found this interesting. You get a kudos, Glacinator, because that is something I have been confronted with by friends of mine in foreign countries, but I never even thought about it in that sense. You know, because like you were talking about 2 weeks ago, was it the show we lost or the show before that, Glace, where you said you'd buy a lot more downloadable content, but you don't have an internet connection at school?
Or yeah, just... I was just going to make the point after you finished talking that the moment that I get good internet in one of my dorm rooms is the day that GameStop dies.
Yeah, I mean, I literally, and this has less to do with digital downloadable games as it does just internet in general. I have enough gamer points on their silly little Pro Edge card or whatever that I'm probably going to get a t-shirt. Maybe I'll give it away on WonderPod if I can't find one I give a shit, or WonderPod if I can't find one I give a shit about. And I'm going to cancel that card. As much as I like getting Game Informer and as much as I do read it, I just don't go in there anymore. I mean, my 360 collection's going to one of these days just avalanche onto me in my sleep and probably kill me because I don't trade in games either. But I literally pretty much do all my business anymore with Amazon and Steam, unless I'm hunting for a used title, which we will get into maybe later in the show. But that's a very interesting point, all of it.
What I was distracted by, I was just looking, like, a point I thought of was, I wonder if the like bandwidth and availability of internet connections is easier somewhere like Europe, whereas, you know, I don't know what it's like where you guys are, but depending on who you get your internet connection with, sometimes you have a cap on how many megabytes of data you can download. So if that, you know, I know someone who hasn't before Netflix changed their output, but he didn't have Netflix because it was just chewing up too much bandwidth, and these high definition movies were taking up so much space. So if you're downloading lots of games, again, that's taking up your allowable bandwidth. And I was trying to see if I could find something, but I didn't find anything. But what that's like in Europe?
I think that comes down to geography again. For the audience at home that doesn't know, I spent a lot of time researching this week how to make Skype calls not such a pain in the fucking ass. And actually, that kind of ties in because the band, you know, it comes down to geography. You're talking about an internet system covering less distance, less space, so you're going to need less server farms. You're going to need less, for lack of a better term, relay stations, or, less infrastructure overall. So maybe it is easier to give people higher bandwidths, faster speeds. I don't know about for Glacinator, but here, so far, our cable company doesn't we don't have a bandwidth cap. For the price we pay, we shouldn't anyway. But again, I think that comes down to, you know, to infrastructure size. Part of the reason they're probably putting those bandwidth caps in place, John, is because they don't have the infrastructure for everybody to download unlimited.
Yeah,
It's why we left AT&T. It's painfully obvious here in the geographical, actual Northern California, not cultural, you know, not SF. It's painfully obvious that AT&T is just cramming more people into their quote-unquote broadband internet and not upgrading their infrastructure and services. And so it just became shit. You know, and so it's like, why do you want to stay with that? Yeah, we pay more now than we did with AT&T, but it's much better service. So yeah, it's all fascinating stuff. I'm impressed, guys. This was a good discussion. Round of applause, because I figured, oh, this will chew up 10 minutes and then we'll move to Audio Master G. It chewed up way more than that. Glacinator too. I got it written down on my notepad of stuff to keep an eye on when I'm cruising the RSS. I'll see if anything pops up about game versus digital sales that might have those numbers, and if I do, we'll maybe bring it back up in a future episode.
Yeah, Manifest Destiny really bit us in the butt, I guess.
Yeah, we're too damn big. Okay, time to start lopping off states we don't like. Sell them to. I can think of one we could start with Texas. Let's see if Mexico wants Texas back. Sorry, a couple people I know who live in Texas that may not like me after that comment. Let's move on to Audio Master G. This week is WrestleMania week. It's been all over WonderPod Online. It's been all over Board Wrestling Fan, who we need to give a shout out to. And our question is wrestling specific with a video game tie-in. So take it away, Audio Master G. Voices
in the air. Hey, hey, Audio Master G here, folks. How's the WPO crew doing? It's that time of year again, the one where thoughts turn to ring ropes, blade jobs, steel chair shots to the head, and so forth. That's right, this Sunday is WrestleMania 28. And accordingly, I'm going to go the route of our so-called sport this week. I figured it might be fun to compare some of the notable grapplers at this year's event as characters in video games. And, you know, these could also be people involved in the industry as well. I realize some of our listeners might not be familiar with all these guys, so I'll give a brief description of the six main eventers as well. Likely to be our third main event on the card is Chris Jericho versus CM Punk for the WWE title. Chris Jericho is a jack of all trades, who has both great in-ring skill and microphone skills. In recent years, Jericho has plied his skills with his band Fozzy touring the world and appeared on Dancing with the Stars. He has returned to determine who is the best in the world. CM Punk, his opponent, is a star on the rise, making waves in social media wars, as well as cutting down the most talked about promo in the last year. Punk is the first guy to tell you what he is thinking and makes no apologies for it and makes up for it in the ring. He is also known for living a straight-edge lifestyle. Alright, next up is Triple H challenging The Undertaker in a Hell in the Cell match. Both men are longtime veterans and company men near the end of their careers. Triple H married into the McMahon family and will serve to take over the reins of the company later. He is known for his backstage politicking and placing a glass ceiling in the way of up-and-comers over the last 10 years. But he is a good in-ring competitor, so we can't take that away from the guy. The Undertaker is a guy who took a cheesy gimmick as an undead, lightning-shooting monster heel to a level that fans actually take seriously, which in itself is quite a feat. The Undertaker is best known for the streak, in that he has never lost at 19 WrestleMania appearances and looks to win on this weekend for number 20. Finally, our main event will feature John Cena versus The Rock. John Cena is called Superman for a reason, because he really never loses. John Cena started as a fan favorite, but his squeaky clean character has gone on to polarize the audience, with the 18-plus male demographic chanting, "Cena sucks," while the women and children chant, "Let's go, Cena." The Rock may be better known for his work in Hollywood these days as Dwayne Johnson, but as a wrestler, The Rock was easily one of the most popular characters during wrestling's popularity height in the late 1990s. One could make a case for him being the reason for that popularity, especially with his innate ability at cutting promos. Okay, this one is running long, so I'm just going to leave it there. So feel free to compare all six of these wrestlers to either video game characters or people in the industry or both. And have fun with this one. And happy WrestleMania weekend, folks. Audio Master G, out.
Hey, G, it's WrestleMania time. It is my favorite time of the wrestling year, and you know, this year is no different than any other. I can't wait for the big show on Sunday. I think it's going to be a really great pay-per-view. It looks like there's going to be three matches on there that are just going to be, you know, real classics, and the rest of the card looks really good too. I hope all you guys out there can check out the podcast I was on with BoardWrestlingFan.com with G and Joe and all the guys and gals, and we would give all our predictions on WrestleMania. I can't wait for it. It's something I look forward to every year. But as far as video game comparisons go, with video game characters with their wrestling counterparts, the first one that popped in my mind was John Cena, who is a little bit like Super Mario. Super Mario always wins. Mario is clean cut. He gets the job done. And I don't know. I guess Cena doesn't always get the girl, but I guess but Mariota doesn't lose and it keeps on chugging. So that was, to me, that was Cena all the way. Sonic the Hedgehog kind of reminds me of Rey Mysterio. He's small, compact, fast, bouncing around wherever he goes. I think Sonic has slowed down a little bit in later years, kind of like Rey Mysterio. But then again, he's still a high flyer, still action packed. Mark Henry, the world's strongest man, he kind of reminds me of Donkey Kong. If there's anybody that can pound the ground and throw those barrels around and be strong enough to just be the overall tough guy, it'd be Mark Henry. Undertaker, I was trying to think of someone zombie-like for that, and I didn't really, but two characters that are just kind of the unstoppable guys who just keep coming and keep coming, like the Undertaker does, would be maybe the Master Chief or maybe Kratos from God of War. Chris Jericho, well, I love Chris Jericho. He's one of my favorites, but my comparison for him was one of those characters from Rock Band, you know, pretending to be a rock and roll star. And finally, if I may pick a classic wrestler, and maybe a little more of a video game reference that might be a little more out there, Macho Man and Elizabeth kind of remind me of I hope I pronounce it right, but Ico, I'm not sure how you pronounce it, but Ico and Yorta. In the Ico game, you're always dragging this helpless girl by the hand from all kinds of dangers and getting her out of harm's way. And that's just what the Macho Man used to do with Elizabeth back in the day. So, yeah, so, you know, that's my game characters. And, I hope everybody enjoys WrestleMania. Who's going to watch it? We're going to have people over and lots of nachos and bad junk food. It's my Super Bowl, so, yeah, here we go.
All right, I don't really watch wrestling, so the only wrestler that I know of is the Rock. So why not the Goron, since he's a rock? And yeah, that was
well
terrible.
Done. Well done, sir.
I'm going to shut up now.
That was actually, if I was going to compare one wrestler to a Goron, it'd be Taz.
Or maybe the Big Show.
No, I think the Big Show actually has more brain power than Taz.
And
I'm talking like
more,
real life, not...
I thought you were going to say more brain power than a Goron.
Oh, well, it's debatable with both of
it's
them.
It's debatable.
I don't know. I've seen Paul White, watch me break kayfabe, do some interviews where he's not the Big Show. He seems to be a pretty intelligent guy.
He definitely is.
Taz, on the other hand...
Kid.
Taz, on the other hand, he's from Brooklyn. I mean, do we really need to say anything more? You know. As for me, I'm not going to be quite as good as John G, so I apologize. Jericho actually reminds me of Dante. Yeah, he doesn't quite flame as bad as Dante, but hey, I could have called him one of the Final Fantasy dudes. But if you remember some of Jericho's 90s, or late 90s, early 2000s outfits, like plastic PVC latex pants, that god-awful mirror ball shirt that he used to wear. Knowing Chris, he probably still does, because there's a lot of Jericho's character that's just the real Chris Jericho being a smart ass. He's actually one of my favorite wrestlers of all time, for some of the promos him and Rock did, trashing Stephanie McMahon during the McMahon-Helmsley era stuff. Let's see, who else I want to do here? You know, it's funny because you could really say that The Rock or Triple H kind of reminds you of God of War, but Trips appears to be getting a little bit of body fat on him. So I think I'm going to give The Rock the kind of more Kratos God of War. Reminds me more of the God of War. Maybe it's just the way The Rock kind of carries himself in the ring, his movements. I know he's getting older and he doesn't wrestle as much anymore. The Undertaker's an interesting one. I'm tempted to just say Pyramid Head. I mean, I know the Undertaker doesn't have a pyramid for a head, but when the Undertaker does the really creepy dead guy stuff, which he hasn't done in many years, as far as I know. I don't, John, you can correct me. I don't assume he's doing the full blown attitude.
Oh, yeah.
Creepy. Is he?
Oh well, he's wearing the hat and the trench coat and and that stuff.
Right, but
yeah,
it's not
the Ministry of Darkness crazy person one. No.
Yeah, I mean that was more creepy, hard edge, almost like horror type stuff, which I liked. I think I was the only one on the planet. So
I thought it was pretty good actually. The like it was almost like he believed his gimmick too much and he had gone over the edge.
I often wonder how much of that has happened because I mean if you. This is probably going to not make G or anybody at BWF too happy, but if you look at them in terms of actors, there are actors who have issues with getting out of character between takes or during long runs of plays and things like that. So I could totally see that, but let me tell you what, it was some of the best stuff he ever did. The early Undertaker, it's like even when I was a kid, it was hard to be afraid of him. Dude's wearing freaking neon purple gloves. He's the dead man. Really? Like, he should get some better fashion sense. I mean, I remember being that way when I was a little kid with him because it was so kid friendly. So to see him as I'm in my early 20s, to see him kind of get almost horror movie like, yeah, I don't care what produced it. It's just some of my favorite. So some of my favorite Undertaker stuff. So I guess overall, good survival horror. Silent Hill 2, some of the early Resident Evils is what Undertaker in his heyday remind me of. I'm gonna go with what John said for Rey Mysterio. I'm blanking on exactly what he said, but I liked it when I was listening to it. John Cena to me, I know they've forced him down the fans' throat to a certain extent, but he's always just seemed so vanilla to me. He just looking at him, just his facial, his facial expressions and experience. He's never sold well with me. So he just, I consider him like the random unit members you have in like COD and Battlefield. They're there for like 10 minutes or maybe a level, but you just never really get to know them. They're just not that interesting. There's been a couple times Cena's interested me, but he really just is, I don't know, he's just always been too vanilla for me. And I freely admit I have not watched a ton of Cena's stuff, but maybe it's the whole white suburban kid trying to be a black gangster thing that's throwing me because that always teased me off. Damn it, there was somebody else in here. Who'd I miss, John? Mark Henry. Actually, Mark Henry reminds me of Majing. I'm like, there's only like five people. I'm one of them, and like Jim Sterling's the other that have played that game. But Majin in the Forsaken Kingdom, I don't think Mark Henry's all that bright, and that's kind of the Majin. He'll do whatever you tell him to, and he's powerful as hell, but he's just not the brightest tool in the shed. Damn it, there's somebody else I'm missing that you said, John, that's actually on the card for this week.
Say that again?
There's somebody I'm missing that's not in this question and that you said that I wanted to talk about that's on the card for this WrestleMania.
Macho Man? The one I said?
Well, yeah, no, he's not definitely not going to be on the card. Oh, Punk! There it is. I found it.
Oh, Punk. Yeah.
I always liked CM Punk. Glacinator and I were actually talking about being lazy, or I was telling Glacinator about how some of my wrestling hiatus was because I was lazy. I got sick of the WWE's product and just was too lazy to go find tapes or find the cheesy channel that the early TNA and for a while ROH were on. But I've always been a fan of Punk. If I could find matches of his on the internet or whatever, I've always thought of him as an extremely good worker, somebody I really got a kick out of. And it's really hard. A video game character for him. I know who it is. I cannot think of the character's name, and I know he's got one, but the main character in Just Cause. that's who CM Punk reminds me of. I'm going to go. Well, what did you say for Punk, John? Yeah, I didn't.
I didn't say anybody for Punk.
Oh, okay.
Punk was in G's list of people he talked about.
Right. He said that they were going to be wrestling, if I read the question correctly.
Yeah, he's wrestling Jericho at the.
That could be end up being that can. There's actually going to end up maybe being two or three good matches on here.
Well, that's what I was saying. Like the Punk Jericho, and as much as I think the conclusion is easy to predict, Undertaker versus Triple H is going to be pretty memorable, and And of course, Roxina should be something memorable, given that they've actually built it for an entire year. They announced it the day after WrestleMania last year.
Yeah, I remember. I remember seeing people bitching on Twitter and Facebook, wrestlers, wrestling people I follow. To wrap up your question, Audio Master, I'm going to give it of the matches you've given us. I'm going to predict Punk Jericho is going to be really good. Who's got the title?
Punk's got it right now.
I don't think Jericho takes it from him. I think Punk will retain. This is, mind you, audience and Audio Master G, I have not watched a single wrestling match in like 2 years or a year at least. Let's see. What do you think is going to happen with Trips and Undertaker? Are they going to break it?
I don't think Triple H will break it. The bigger question for me is whether after 20-0 will the Undertaker announce his retirement? Because they're still billing it "end of an era" is the big catchphrase for this match, and the more I hear that, and the more the person who breaks Taker's streak should, you know, it really should be somebody who can make their career on it, because Triple H does not need that feather in his cap, because he is not even a full time wrestler anymore. So it should be someone up and coming who they'll always be able to say, "I broke the streak." But then again, 20 is a nice round number, you know. It's
Hogan. Basically Hogan versus Andre is what you're talking. It needs to be something like that.
Yeah, Andre made Hogan that night. You know, Hogan was still popular, but that was the passing of that torch. You know, Hogan losing to The Rock at WrestleMania 18, which I was at, by the way. Another passing of the torch kind of thing.
Very good match as well.
Well, it was definitely a memorable match. You know, looking back at it, I'm not sure if it was the greatest match of all time, but it was definitely one of the matches that had every fan in the palm of their hands. And I was there getting caught up in Hulkamania, and I went in there to cheer for The Rock, but I ended up cheering for Hogan. Like,
it's crazy. I think it's going to depend on Triple H's ego. I mean,
entirely.
I know that he's nowhere near as bad as a lot of the blogs and dirt sheets like to make him be, or claim he is, because he's put people over that I just went, really? You know, yeah. It's painfully obvious. His attitude has kind of shifted in the last 4 or 5 years, 6 years. I don't know if Triple H is man enough to let Taker beat him as many, or not at least make it like some kind of schmoz ending, you know, stupid ass shit. And I mean, they're in Hell in a Cell.
Yeah.
So
with Shawn Michaels as the referee. So it's interesting because we're getting pretty deep into the storylines, but it was two WrestleManias ago that Undertaker retired Shawn Michaels when Michaels was trying to beat the streak.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, I remember. Yeah. I don't know. Those guys have had hellacious Hell in the Cell matches. I think that one's going to be memorable. Whether it has an ending that enrages fans or not is going to be questionable. The last one, and it's the last one that I'll predict, since we're kind of a video gaming podcast and now I'm derailing it into wrestling. If Cena listens to The Rock, if Cena lets The Rock kind of help or dictate how they choreograph the match, you know, or how they do certain things, it's going to be a really good match. Because you can say whatever you want about Dwayne Johnson, but you look at all the different types of wrestlers he's wrestled over the years in big circumstances and the guys he's put over. I mean, come on. He put over... What was that stupid superhero guy?
The Hurricane.
He put over the Hurricane big time, throughout this whole run. And one thing that I liked about Hogan and The Rock was the fact that it really looked like Dwayne was making damn sure that he didn't disrespect Hogan, but at the same time got a damn good match out of it. Whether it was the most technically perfect match or not, you know. Yeah. So I think Roxina will really depend on how much input The Rock has in it. Maybe I'm nuts, but a lot of his matches, it really seems like, and of course I've read his autobiography that from his earlier years, it really seems like that Dwayne has a pretty good in-ring sense of certain things. And sure, he's had crapper matches too, but that's actually the one I'm the least, if I was actually going to sit down and watch it, that's the one I'm least interested in. I think I'd rather watch. I'll probably find some way. If I start hearing that Triple H Taker was Foley Taker-esque, I'll probably find some way to watch it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because I have a feeling they're both stupid enough, and I mean that in the nicest way possible. They're both stupid enough, stubborn enough, and tough enough that I have a feeling it might be even more outrageous than Foley Undertaker.
Well, I mean, the WWE has been so clean, like there's been no blood and the real heavy violence level has you know, as much as there's always, you know, violence in wrestling, but
right.
Like it's not as blatant as it used to be, even 6 or 8, 6 or 7 years ago. So, but I think that this match, where it's a Hell in a Cell and these two really old school guys, I think they're going to go all out and just, you know, bleed all over the place.
Final word, and then we got to get back to video games for at least one news story. If they don't, they're idiots. I know they've been trying to be more kid friendly, but I'm sorry. Both of those guys have had some really violent, nasty Hell in a Cell matches. To have anything, at least not approaching that, unless they just don't want to, then fair enough, is ridiculous.
Yeah.
Because both, all three of them, actually, Michaels, Taker, and Triple H, have all had just some god-awful, nasty Hell in a Cell matches. The inner Roman in me likes... really loves those matches.
Yeah.
I'm not gonna admit I understand pain, and I understand that at times they're cutting themselves and at times serious injuries happen, but the inner sadist in me really likes a good Hell in a Cell match.
Yeah, I mean, they're two guys. I'm fairly certain that nobody other than the two of them have had more Hell in a Cell matches between the two of them, and yeah, I mean, the two guys know how to work that match and make it something special. It should be them.
Yeah, exactly. So there you go, Audio Master G. Not only did we answer your character versus wrestler questions, or which character would wrestlers be, but I gave you my predictions. Watch me be dead wrong. I'll actually pay attention to Twitter to see if I even come close to being right. I think Triple H will take the pin. I think Triple H will let him go, and then if, like you said, if the WWE is not smart enough to get some up and coming star who needs like an Andre Hogan moment, they're beyond hope.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, I'm still dragging the wrestling on. I think Undertaker is. I mean, I mentioned this on the BWF podcast. I think Undertaker is at a point now where he can wrestle once a year at WrestleMania just for the streak match if he wants to.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody has missed him, and when he came back, everybody was excited. So I think Taker's streak match is a special attraction until they find the guy who, the right guy to break it. Can keep on going. I mean he's, I think Taker's like 46 or 47, and as much as that's getting up there for, you know, to a certain degree, there's still a couple more in him, I think, unless he's a lot more beat up than I think he is. But
yeah, if it's only once a year, probably. Okay, yeah. Before we move to the only news story we're doing tonight, because John and I talked about wrestling too long, Glacier, are you still awake, or are you still on the call?
Are you alive?
Yeah, I'm still here.
I don't know if he did it on purpose, but your voice is like, yeah, yeah, I'm okay. The only thing I guess we're going to talk about tonight, so we don't make the show super long, or I guess we could give them two shows for the price of one. I'm not going to do that because I'm too lazy in editing. There's another report or rumor, and of course this came from was passed on from Kotaku, so take it with about a dump truck of salt. The PS4 is called Orbis. I've seen that in enough places that I do agree that's probably its code name. It's launching in late 2013, which supposedly the Xbox, next Xbox will be 2, won't offer backwards compatibility, will feature anti-used game measures, which has also been rumored on the Xbox. Now, my first one... the first part of this, we're going to get into the used games thing. But my first thing is, what is wrong with them, John, and these game companies in general? What is so bloody hard about offering backwards compatibility? I mean, I just don't freaking get it.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, part of me thinks, like, back when we were growing up, and you know, the Super Nintendo, N64, none of that stuff had backwards compatibility, and we didn't complain. You know, one part of me thinks that. Then the other part of me is you know, it's like they just don't. You know, there's so much money invested in my collection, and like, why can't I play this on my new system? It doesn't have to be up-res. I just want to be able to access my library without having to hook my PS3 back up. I don't know what's wrong with them for that, I just don't know how difficult it is, or is it that much of a money drain to have it for something that people don't really use? I thought it was awesome when the Wii first came out that it had backwards compatibility for GameCube games, because I still had a few in my back catalog. But then again, you know, maybe some people just don't care about that stuff.
Glacinator, what's your thoughts on that, on the no backwards compatibility rumor? Wish we could bold stuff on air without screaming.
Every gamer I've ever talked to, everyone that's ever played a game, has always liked backward compatibility. There's someone that's like, man, I hate being able to play old games on my new system. That's a terrible idea. I mean, if it's not that hard to implement, why not implement it? I mean, they may not make a profit from old games, but it's still a nice thing to have. I mean, it may encourage people to buy a new system because newer systems are having more stuff to do on the systems besides just playing games. So you may just want to have a hub system, you know, for DVDs, for music, for whatever, and then play your old games on them. So, I mean, if anything, it would drive sales, not lessen sales. So there's no reason not to do it.
I used to be like John. For a long time, I didn't really care. Either I'd have the old system hooked up because I never get rid of anything like that, and I haven't had that many consoles. Or I'd just keep an old PC around that I didn't have to screw with trying to make it work on newer specs. The only way I would give any of these game companies, hardware makers, the benefit of the doubt is if this is just so brutally difficult to do. In the case of Sony, I don't see how it can be because it's all Blu-ray. So if you're able to do it fairly conveniently and cheaply by technology, it makes no sense to me to not do it for the goodwill with gamers. I have probably roughly 20 360 games behind me. Probably 10 at least of those, maybe 12, are ones that I would continue to play for as long as I could possibly play from time to time. I'm starting to believe that I'm a dinosaur when it comes to that theory of actually replaying stuff 6 months later. But I just, short of cost, cost is the only way I'd give any of these companies a free pass on why they're not doing this. I'm sure there's some used game sale horseshit blah, blah, blah thing that they'd try and trot out if you actually pinned them to it. Which brings us to the next portion of the rumor that it will not, that it will feature an anti-used games measure. Now, here's the thing. This is a little different. I always suspected it would be hardware, or some way to check with the drive, whether it's Blu-ray or DVD drive. But according to this story, that the PS4 will feature inbuilt anti-used game measures. Games are expected to be available on Blu-ray disc or digitally and will be likely locked to one PSN account that is required for players to boot them up. Secondhand buyers would then have to pay an unlock fee to access the full game content, yada, yada, yada. I don't want to get into the outrage because, to be honest, I don't give a shit. As far as I'm concerned, let them do it. Fuck it. It's not going to affect me. It seriously isn't. Any used game that I can't play on the next Xbox or the next PS3 or the next Sony, I'll buy on Steam when it gets down to the price I want, and screw it. My question to you, Glacinator, is if they follow through with these anti-used games measures, is it going to affect you all that much? Personally, you personally?
I mean, not extremely as much as I'm going to go out and start throwing stuff at people because I'm enraged. But, I mean, yeah, a little bit. I mean, a lot of the games that I do buy when they're not like day one purchases are like maybe 2 years after the game has come out and I'm at GameStop and it's used on the shelf and I'm like, oh, BioShock. No, it's only $10. I might as well get this. And so I pick it up and I play BioShock. I do that for a lot of games just because it's not something that I would necessarily play in the first place. So I don't mind putting down a lesser amount of cash for it. So if I went back now, let's say this is implemented right now, and I went to GameStop and I was thinking about getting BioShock, if it was still that original price, then no, I probably wouldn't buy it.
What if the unlock fee, say, was only like $5? Or better yet, let's just make it this: is there a fee that you would be willing to give them, even though we all know this is ridiculous and not going to increase their profits in any way, shape, or fucking form?
I think anything more than $5 is ridiculous.
So, but you would be willing to pay $5 to bring in your?
I think $5 would be okay.
So that'd bring your total BioShock purchase up to $15, let's say.
Yeah, I'm fine with that.
Okay. John, same basic question. Go with the first part. Is this really going to affect you? And then you can give me a number on whether you'd be willing to pay the fee or not.
For me, it wouldn't affect me that much personally because I don't, and not that I have anything against buying used games. I just tend not to. From everything I've ever seen at our EB Games in here in town, the price between used and new is about $5 on the average, I would say, like $5 or less. Like a brand new game that just came out that's used is definitely only $5 cheaper than the brand spanking new copy. So, yeah, for someone who doesn't buy used games that much, paying a small fee wouldn't be that bad to unlock it. But then again, if it's only the difference between a used and a new game anyway, maybe I'd just buy the new game.
What's your fee threshold, or is there one? Is it just avoid used games?
If I was going to, I probably wouldn't want to go beyond $5. I mean, especially if I'm buying a game that's now, you know, 2 or 3 years old, and it's only, and I just bought it for $10. Do I really want to pay $5? You know, 50% of the price just to unlock it when you knew it's probably only 15 or 12 anyway. You know, I mean, how do you regulate the cost of the unlock if the price of the game new drops over the course of time? Does the unlock fee stay the same for every game? Like, how do you regulate that?
Well, I'm not sure how they're going to regulate it, nor do I care. I just was curious what your price point was. And on top of that, you got to think about it. If you're not ordering from Amazon or online, like I'm looking at the original BioShock on the Platinum Hits that Glacinator used as his example. New, I can get it for about $12.74 from Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, 2K is going to get a little bit of money, but they're still not going to make this fucking hand over fist that they think they're losing to used sales. I was just more curious on your price point.
Yeah, I mean, I was only speaking hypothetically about regulation. I wasn't looking for an answer.
Oh,
like, I was just thinking, like, It sounds like a big can of an awfully big can of beans to open when the time comes.
They don't care. Again, it's all about this mythical mess of defeating evil used game sales. And I mean, Dennis Dyack, creator of Silicon Knights, creator of Too Human, was going on and on and on this week about how it's killing used game sales. Like back when World of Warcraft 2 was out, it was out for years, and you could purchase it any time you wanted to. You can't do that anymore. You gotta sell within a month. Like fucking Rain Man. And it's like, you know what? How old is BioShock? How many years has BioShock been at? And I'm looking at a brand fucking spanking new copy. You know, and so this myth that used game sales are making publishers go out of business left and right is horseshit in the first place. This is all about control. It's as simple as that. They want you to not have that much freedom of choice. And they have the technology to do it. Now, personally, I don't give a shit. They want to do that, that's fine. It'll just make me implement a console slower, meaning after it's come out. It will make me probably spend more time on my PC. And I could even see in the case of Xbox, if Xbox is indeed what I go with next time, I could even see where I wouldn't be paying for the full year membership anymore. I would get a gold card for, so let's say Battlefield number 6 is coming out, and Glace and Pat and G are going to be playing for about 3 months. And I'd buy two 3-month cards. Yeah, I only gave them half a year. Yeah, it might have cost me a little bit. But they're still losing money because of this kind of garbage where I'm not using a console as much because I would be back to PC. The PC I've got is probably good for 3 or 4 years at least. If I don't start monkeying with it and upgrading it more to play most of the games that will be coming out. So I'm not too, and especially games that are older that I would supposedly have been buying used on console, you know. So this threat does not disturb me. And of course, it'll probably be one of the few good uses for the irrational outrage tinfoil helmet storm. We'll finally put them to some good use. That which would lead to my second question. John, we'll start with you. It's kind of more just yes or no. Do you think any of them are going to do it?
Well, that's the that's really the big question. Will they do it? If they do, whoever does it is going to have some pretty big balls to actually take that plunge. I think they have to bring it in slowly rather than, you know, shut the door and it's over. I think I just don't see it happening. It's so hard to deprogram people from the way they used to do things, and not get flack about and not get some flack back up about it. So I think you may not see it all in one console, but it'll, you know, if it happens, I think it'll be gradual.
Glacinator, we gonna see it from somebody this generation?
Either Microsoft's going to do it and everything's going to turn out okay, or Sony's going to do it and for some reason that's going to screw them up royally.
Yeah, I don't see Nintendo doing this. Here's how I look at it.
I didn't even mention Nintendo because that's just ridiculous.
Yeah, they don't have anything anybody wants used anyway. Yeah. Not this generation.
So you got like 3 games from the Wii that you can play on your Wii U?
The only ones I see doing it, the only ones I see arrogant enough and stupid enough to implement it fully is Sony. They never fucking learn. Microsoft might mess with it a little bit, but the one other news story that we didn't do tonight was talking about the 360 becoming more of an entertainment hub and console than purely for gaming. And as much as that kind of hurts the inner hardcore gamer in me to acknowledge that, my friends list tells me that that's kind of true, and it's getting more true by the day. Mm-hmm. So I don't think Microsoft is going to be full draconian about it. But here's the thing. Through all the bullshit that they have suffered through, a lot of it their own dumb fault, Sony hasn't fucking learned. And they're still just arrogant enough to believe that people will swallow their bullshit. And they never learn. And it's almost sad to a point. It's like watching a sick kitten go off a cliff. I mean, you want to feel bad, but at the same time, you just weren't fast enough to do anything about it. So, you know, but it's at this point that, I don't know. I want a healthy Sony because competition is good. But they just never learn. So for me, I think if anybody does it fully and enough to make the current Mass Effect 3 outrage look like a gentle shower, I think it's probably going to be Sony. I hope they don't. I mean, it's coming. Publishers and developers whine and cry and give no proof other than whining and bitching. That used game sales statistically have actually damaged new. That it's going to happen.
I'm calling it now. It's Sony.
Yeah, I think so too.
Yeah, I agree that I think if anyone's going to do it first, it'll be Sony.
They just don't fucking learn. I mean, I'm sorry, but they're about out of goodwill. They got to be at this point. I mean, I understand that the 1% of hardcore fans, Sony Defense Force fanboys you see running around the net. But I was thinking about, like, for my birthday, which was just recently, or even Christmas, I was thinking about picking up a PS3. But after that data debacle and the fact that it was so late in the generation, I just kind of decided no. I might write before they go to the next one so I can buy a bunch of used PS3 games on the dirt cheap as well as the console. But yeah, I don't know. That's not even to, you know, just to give you audience something to think about. That's not even getting into the fact that I can't count how many times I've played a game and then proceeded to play the sequels because I bought the original game used. Mass Effect comes to mind. when I think of that term, I probably wouldn't have played Mass Effect 2 and probably won't eventually play Mass Effect 3 if I hadn't picked up Mass Effect, crappy buggy controls and all, for about $20 in a used bin, or 15. So, there you go, people. We got enough show. Let me tell you how you guys can get in touch with us. You could tell us what you think about wrestling characters as characters in video games, or you can tell us what you think about the used game thing. If it starts off with four-letter words and screaming, I will just delete it. Here's how you can do that. We have a Facebook. It's WonderPod Online. Search for us on Facebook, WonderPod Online. You might even, if you carefully search through the seven army of seven over 700, you might find the three of us somewhere in there. We have a website. It's WonderPodOnline.com. Original, I know. We are on iTunes. You have to search for us because apparently we were not pretty enough to be prom queen or king, so we are not in the listings, but you can find us on iTunes. If you don't like iTunes, we have I Post a Player on WonderPod Online, or you can get it at archive.org, which you can find all those links usually every Friday night, just to keep Roger happy, on the Facebook, because I try to have the show done as fast as humanly possible. We have YouTube. That's also WonderPod Online, or you can find 36Wii's channel. That's our good buddy and former co-host Pat. And if none of that works, we have an email address. It's wonderpodonline@gmail.com, wonderpodonline@gmail.com. Or you can follow us on Twitter at WonderPodOnline. You can follow me on Twitter if you so desire, at O-R-I-G-I-M, or you can follow John on Twitter.
At John Kehoe, J-O-N-K-E-H-O-E.
Damn it, I forgot to look up Glacinators. That's all right. Until episode 104, I am Bruce McGee. I am off to eat some really good ribs. See you, people.
Cheers, guys.
Goodbye.